Live from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, the Total Education Show, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators. Here's your host of the show, Neil Haley, the Total Tutor.
We're back to the Total Celebrity Show on the Total Education Network. Again, TotalTutor.net for more information. Twitter, Total Tutor, Neil S. Haley, Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley, Instagram, Total Tutor, Pinterest, Neil Haley, and Google Plus, Neil Haley. And let the exciting interviews roll on and roll on. Busy week, excitement tomorrow going to the TV studio. But when you talk about TV, you talk about my favorite show and my wife's favorite show, Modern Family, ABC's Modern Family. And if you would have told me when we were watching the show a couple of years ago, I was going to have someone from Modern Family. So I'm excited to welcome to the program Brooke Sorensen from Modern Hello. Family. Brooke, great to have you on the show. And it's an interesting character, to say the least, isn't it, when you first auditioned for this, right? And you didn't expect what it'd be.
Very interesting. Very
You never know how the Modern Family writers come up with things, right?
They're hilarious. But I love the character. When I first read it, I was like, oh my God, this is hilarious. This family that moved next to Dumpy's, so funny. I want this so bad. I'm like, oh yeah, this is mine.
Did you have an idea that it was going to be that kind of a character when you first auditioned, or did they kind of tell you?
Oh, yeah. I went in for the first audition, and they kind of gave me an idea about what the character is going to be, and I was like, okay, this is interesting. It kind of gave me an idea what to wear, you know, what, for the callback, and then I went in for the callback, and I have a funny story with the callback. I came out not thinking I was going to be full at all. I went in. Yeah, it's always those, you know, where you're like, you completely think you're not going to get it. But I had this idea that I was going to do something special, and I was going to chew gum during my scene, because so it was something that Tammy would do. And then I was going to pull it out and stick it on my acrylic finger and on one of my lines and say my line. And I totally messed up in the audition, in the callback. And I was like, oh my God, this is like the worst day ever. And I came out and I was like, Mom, there's no way I got it. I was so upset. I was like, ah, darn it. And then I got the call. They're like, you're kidding. They love you. And I was like, are you kidding me, brother? Because I did not think I was going to get it at all.
Well, it sounds so interesting. A lot of times we think we don't roll it, but they saw you were the perfect fit for that gig. So I'm going to take you back, and this is the way I always have to take you back, because I'm interested in knowing your experience in acting before that. So before that opportunity, what was your biggest break before Modern Family?
Before Modern Family, it took me a while to get started out here. You know, it's a tough business. I didn't book for first year and a half, actually, I was out here. But I kept going, and I booked a Fox comedy pilot. It was called The Gabriels, with Rob Riggle with my dad and Angela Kinsey with my mother. And they are so funny. Angela Kinsey from The Office, and then Rob Riggle, he's in so many funny little bit parts. But it was awesome. I played part of the family, The Gabriels family, and I was kind of the grounded. That's probably the character that I can relate to the most that I played. She was kind of really grounded, and the rest of her family was really crazy, and she was really grounded, always like saying that they were really crazy. But that was my first real break, and that was really really exciting. It didn't get picked up, but we have great footage, and it was a great experience.
And those things happen. Do they ever bring back any pilots after they don't pick them up? You never know in the world of this business.
Never know. That was a great one. That was a lot of fun. And that was like my first job that I booked in LA, and I was like, I was so stoked for it. It was so much fun.
Then after that, it was easier, right, with auditions. Once you got that one role,
you put
it on the resume for sure. Then things became easier, right?
Yeah. That's kind of how it works. I kind of it was hard at first, you know, you just got to keep going and keep going. There's so much more rejection, like, compared to the ones that you do book. There's so many auditions that, you know, that don't work out. But after that, I started booking stuff with Disney and Nickelodeon, and then Modern Family came along. So, yeah.
And it's interesting. A lot of the things that happen in Disney lead to your opportunity with ABC. And we all know why, and certain reasons because of the relationship between the two. But you're getting you get that experience on bigger shows in Disney, and then they see if you have that talent to audition for the big stage, especially with different storylines and things like that. So I saw one of them. You were on Austin and Ally, which again is very popular, and that was must have been interesting.
Oh yeah, that's coming out soon. It hasn't come out yet. I'm super excited.
Oh really? When does that come out?
It comes out at the end of. The end of this month, actually. Is it March? It's, what day is it? It's like, it comes out March 23rd, I want to say. It's like this, like next week, something like that. But I'll definitely, like, if you follow me, like, on Instagram and stuff, I'll definitely have, like, the date and be promoting it. Because I'm really excited for that. Maddie Ziegler stars in it. She's from Dance Moms, and she plays my little sister. So that was, like...
Oh, really? So she's acting now. Wow, interesting. Yeah, I didn't know that.
Yeah, she is. Now, and she gets to do some dancing on the show too, so I play her kind of snotty older sister, which was sad because she's so sweet, and I was like, I've been so mean to you, but it was so much fun. Everyone's so sweet over on that set, and I'm having what I love right now is I've had the opportunity to work on so many different sets, you know, not just one. Like I like have experience with different directors, different actors, different characters, and some people just get thrown into one show, which is great, but I'm really happy being able to have different experiences with different kinds of directors and a bunch of different sets. So,
and you're getting to be on different shows that are pretty popular. It's interesting, and then they'll see you. Hey, are we going to call you back? Different things like that, and that's what you're seeing with Modern Family. You know that family's not disappearing, because I'm sure by putting them on the show, it's really a good. Way to cause controversy, especially with the Dumfies. The Dumfies they absolutely see, oh gosh, we really don't want these neighbors. Well, all the Dumfies believe that. So it's a really, really a good storyline that kind of really is funny. Everything about Modern Family is funny. And so were you a fan of it before you even auditioned? It sounds like you were.
I was totally a fan of Modern Family before I auditioned. My dad, like, that's his favorite show ever. He said, when we moved out here, he's like, the one show that I have to go on set with you if you guys book is Modern Family. He laughed so hard till he cried when he watched that show. So when I told him, that was so fun. I called him and I was like, Dad, guess what? Guess it's going to be a Modern Family. And he was like, no way. He was so excited. But our whole family, like, loved that.
Are there any more episodes coming up for you, Brooke, with Modern Family, or you can't say what's going on next with that?
In the last episode, you kind of see the relationship between Luke and my character, Tammy. So that's it was kind of a little teaser of what's kind of coming. And so I hope that they continue with that relationship and the audience gets to see more with the Luke and Tammy, because
I think it's definitely a good storyline, and it'll be quite interesting for sure. What did you learn working on this with this cast? I mean, they're so talented. They truly are.
So talented. Steve Zahn plays my dad. He's the funniest man that I've ever met in my life. Like everyone else is so funny, but like Steve Zahn, I met him. I was like, oh my gosh, you are the funniest. Like, there's some people that just walk and they don't have to say anything, and they're just funny. They just make you laugh. That's like everyone on the set of Modern Family. But working with like award-winning actors is amazing. I've been watching them so many like in the seasons in the past. And what I like about Modern Family, and they did this in The Gabriels as well, my Fox pilot, they kind of don't always stick to a script. You know, they kind of go off and do their own little thing, own little improv thing. And I love that about Modern Family. And it's kind of like an office kind of thing. They do that on The Office a lot. They'll just like go off and do like little improv things and mess around in different takes. And so I love that. And it was different than anything I've ever done. And there's so much to learn on set. I mean, they're like brilliant.
Who would you say, what would you learn most about being on the set of Modern Family? What was taught? You like seeing the improv and specific things, but observing some of the actors and their working, and especially working with this family, meaning the main characters on Modern Family for so many years with the great success. What do you see that makes them different than other sets, especially being on it? What would you say? That's a tough question. That's a tough question because you're looking at the success of that crew and look at how many awards they have won and and the brilliance of them. So what would you say?
They're honestly, they're just so brilliant. It's hard to pick one thing about them that's like, that just makes the show. But they all bring their own essence, like, from themselves. They all put their own twists on the character, you know, like Julie Bowen. I've had this question before. People have asked me, you know, like, who's closest to their character on the show, and I would have to say Julie Bowen. She is, like, she's got the same energy in real life that she has on the show, and that's what I kind of learned, is, like, bringing your own, like, little twist to the character, and not, like, that kind of ties into the whole improv thing, but not always sticking to the script, and just bringing your own, like, own little something, your own, it's hard to put it into words, but they just bring their own little essence to everything they say, and they're just hilarious. Like, I'm cracking up right now just thinking about it.
Yeah, and see, that's what I'm just trying to get, that little things that you're able to see, but you see that specifically they're a nice cast to work with, and you see specifically
they're great. They're so nice. That's one thing too. They're so grounded. I mean, like all the awards that they've won and all the seasons that Modern Family's been going, and they are so nice and welcoming. Like, every single person shook my hand and met me right when I walked into the Chapel Reed, and they're really, really grounded and nice.
And that's nice to hear, because, I mean, Brooke, because we all know some people take their success too far, but you couldn't have a successful show for so long, or you would have disagreements. You have people that get along with each other, so you're not going to have someone that leaves the cast and then the show's done. You know, just imagine one person deciding he's going to walk off and do his own thing. Let's talk about Steve Carell. He left, and Office was not Office again, in my opinion. So there you go. Just imagine someone leaving the cast of Modern Family. Would that family continue? I don't think so.
Exactly. A huge part of what makes a show so successful is the chemistry and having really grounded, nice people that get along with each other and you know, like, if drama happens on a show, and then that chemistry isn't that special something just isn't there anymore. And Modern Family, I mean, they're just all so nice, and they're a real family. So, and that definitely comes across on screen.
So we also see music's a passion of yours as well, Brooke, and that's what probably led to certain things, like you played the violin. You're going to play the violin prodigy on Disney's Austin and Ally, and also other things. And Disney always likes to see a jack of all trades, someone who's not just one thing, a pretty face. They want to see that you can do a lot of different things, because they don't know where they're taking you next. So tell me specifically about your music.
Wow, music has always been a passion of mine, along with acting. I discovered how much I love singing along with acting because I started off in musical theater. And so I started singing Broadway tunes, and I actually auditioned for Broadway a little bit in New York City when I was younger. And that's such a different kind of auditioning process than TV. But then I decided, I'm like, you know, I want to sing, like, pop stuff. And so I made that kind of transition, and I've always loved it. Acting and singing they're both ways of expressing yourself, but singing is like, it's just expressing yourself through your own shoes and your own feelings, and acting is expressing yourself. Like I said, you bring your own essence.
Exactly.
It's expressing yourself through somebody else's shoes. But I love singing. I have a new single coming out called 3 Days. I don't have a release date yet for it, but I'm so excited for it to come out. And it's kind of Taylor Swift-y. It's got that kind of vibe definitely like a Disney kind of Nick kind of that kind of audience is what it's kind of targeted to. But I'm super, super excited for it to come out.
Have I missed any other projects for you to promote? Again, because we're going to always see you on demand. You could check you out Modern Family. You can check you out on Austin Alley. We have to follow you on Instagram to find out about that. Any other projects coming up that we have to keep our eyes on for you to see?
Oh, yeah, more episodes of Mighty Med, which I'm recurring on Disney XD, are coming. And I think I've had a couple more episodes of Thundermen, too. Those are Nick and Disney coming out. So if you follow me on my Twitter and Instagram, then I'll definitely always make sure it, I always put out the dates and where you can catch me, and my music, more music coming too.
Do you think you're going to be doing movies soon too? Do you see that as happening?
I want to, you know, I'm auditioning, I'm keeping busy. So hopefully we get some movies coming. That would be awesome.
So when are we going to hear news about what's happening next with you and Modern Family? How long do we have to wait to find out that news? How long?
I'm pretty sure in the next couple of months, some new news will be coming out. I think in the next season, I'm not really sure. Is that, season has ended. Yeah, definitely
in
the next couple months.
Yeah, I think I'm starting to see repeats. I'm telling my wife, we all watch our On Demand on the weekends. We're too busy in the weekdays to do it. We're like, okay, let's go to On Demand. And we're like, why is this a repeat? And they didn't tell us that. I'm like, oh, come on now. Yeah. We know the time. And it's amazing what ABC does. I mean, honestly, they keep bringing great shows. I'm a fan of a lot of shows on ABC, and I'm glad that I'm getting a lot of ABC guests on the program for sure. I'm hoping again. I was a huge fan of different shows. I'm liking American Crime now. That is an unbelievable show, and I really liked How to Get Away with Murder. I can't wait till that season comes. That floored me at the end. I don't know if you got to watch. Oh my gosh, that show is unbelievable. So ABC.
I've heard some great things about a lot of ABC shows like this.
Exactly, exactly.
They got it going on.
But I hope, I've not heard anything, and my listeners out there got to tell me what's up with ABC's Resurrection. I had the creator on, and I hope they didn't cancel it because I love that show as well. Always great shows on ABC, and check it out. So, Brooke, where's the best place we can find information on you and check you out? And I know that people can go back on demand on ABC and check out your episodes on Modern Family, which episodes you were on. And I'm sure if you Google yourself, we can find those also at Hulu and all those different places. But where's the best place we can find you? Where can we go?
You mean keep in touch?
Yeah. Your Instagram. Media. Yeah. What social media, all that. Yeah.
All right. So my Instagram is just at Brooke Sorensen. Very simple. Twitter is a little different. It's Brooke N. Sorensen. My website, I have all of all of the projects that I'm working on, and that's BrookeNSorensen.com. And then you can also give my Facebook a like too. And I'm always I'm always giving updates on that. And that is Facebook.com/BrookeSorensen13. And if you type in, you know, Brooke Sorensen fan page on there, then you can give that a like. And yeah, I'm always updating. I'm always keeping in contact with all my followers on there. I love being able to keep in contact with everybody. So. And get immediate response, you know, when something airs and be able to see.
Live tweeting, live Instagramming is the way to go.
Yeah.
If you don't, then you can really pick up a lot of new fans and keep people pushing. We need to see Brooke more on Modern Family. That's what we're going to push.
Yes.
We want that relationship to happen so that we continue to see your career grow. So people need to tweet out, we want more of Brooke on Modern Family. Get that started right now on Twitter. But I appreciate you coming on the show, learning about Modern Family, your other projects as well. On Disney, and I see big things coming from you, and best of luck,
and
just keep on working, because again, you're doing the right thing right now. You're on that right show. Once you get that opening opportunity, if you look at research, smaller roles on big shows leads to big opportunities. So best of luck to you.
Thank you so much.
All right, take care, Brooke. See you later. Okay.
Bye.
You're listening to the Total Celebrity Show, and we'll be back in just. We're back to the Total Celebrity Show on the Total Education Network. Again, TotalTutor.net for more information. Twitter, TotalTutor, Neil S. Haley. Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley. Instagram, TotalTutor. Pinterest, Neil Haley. And Google+, Neil Haley. And you know, it's kind of funny. Last year, I tried to do something crazy. I did this Spain late night interviews. I think it was 2-3 in the morning, live in Spain for their World Radio Challenge. And I had a guest on. Her name was Pamela Guest. Fantastic. I enjoyed it. And then she told me, by the way, my husband was in National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation. And then I was like, are you kidding me? I have to have him on the show. Well, you know what? I finally asked for it. I guess almost a year later, I want to welcome the program, Nicholas Guest, celebrity Nicholas Guest. Nicholas, thanks for calling. And that experience must have been amazing because you're going to live forever. Everyone's going to remember you from that part. Because, you know,
it was so much fun. Yeah, it really was. I feel very blessed that I had that opportunity. It was terrific, yeah.
I mean, just think of it. I mean, Nicholas, this is the movie that's probably replayed in everyone's home more than many movies ever, for sure.
That's actually true.
Yeah.
I mean, it's one of the major Christmas movies, obviously, you know, along with one of my favorite movies with Jimmy Stewart. Obviously, It's a Wonderful Life.
Yeah.
No, it was an amazing thing how successful it became. Yeah.
So when you heard you got this part in this project, you're probably thinking another Lampoons. You never knew it was going to, because especially when you think sequels, you think, you know, it's not going to do well. And then once it started to get this cult classic, were you shocked or did you expect it once you were on the set?
I thought it would be successful because I was, you know, working with Julia Louis-Dreyfus, who was brilliant. And there was just the first day of shooting, I just felt that. There was something unbelievable about the whole atmosphere, and Jeremiah Chechik was superb as the director. He really was. He knew exactly what he wanted. When it came to timing, he had directed a lot of commercials, which actually really comes in handy, you know, to figure out timing and editing. But and if you look at the cast, it's actually William Hickey, who's in it, one of the grandfathers.
Yes,
was my first acting teacher, and I actually. I'm currently portraying him at one point in a one-man show that I'm doing called Finding Nick. But he was my great inspiration, or one of them, in the very beginning. Cast is just phenomenal. I mean, and then, you know, it was a perfectly written script, well-directed, but it always, in a way, it always goes back to the cast, you know, the chemistry. So it was all there. It was amazing. But when my wife and I saw that for the first time, you know, when just that whole beginning with the music, we just thought, oh, my goodness, here we go. This really was quite spectacular. So I feel really, really lucky to have been involved with it.
Do you get spotted a lot in different places based on being in the movie, do you think, Nicholas?
I think so. Yeah. I really do. I know it sounds sort of like a cliche, but there really was a kind of energy and the script was phenomenal. I mean, the Randy Quaid character was just so beautifully written. I'd worked with him on The Long Riders, but, you know, that's one of the great characters of all time, Randy's character. I mean, they're all wonderful, but that was quite spectacular. You know, the scene when they're shopping for his kids with the big bags of dog food and so forth. I mean, that's genius.
You know what's also funny, Nicholas, is then we talk about that cult classic. Then you get involved in Frozen, which is probably going to be bigger than – it's definitely going to be bigger than National Lampoon's. So when
I'm very fortunate. I belong to these – they're really essentially improv groups, and we're brought in to do all kinds of voices on these films. And my goodness, I mean, I had done a little bit of that on Trek, which who knew about that either. But on Frozen, we did a series of British – characters. So often the villains, you know, the bad guys are British, and
yes.
I'm half British, so I love doing that. You know, people who are apt to get the, you know, the bad guys. It's just a lot of fun.
Well, absolutely. Okay, so let's go right to the project Finding Nick and learning about Finding Nick and stuff like that, and specifically, and that's what you're promoting right now. So tell us a little about that, Nicholas.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's actually going through. It's really in a way, I'm thanking all the people that I ever came into contact with. My dad was at the UN, and when I was in high school, he suddenly announced that we were going off to Switzerland for a year. And in New York, I'd been going to a school where you could kind of get by easily. We like to refer to it as a progressive school, you know, where you could call the teacher by the first name. If you didn't understand the math problem, this is in the show. He said, that's okay, Nick, you can write a poem about geometry, you know. And then suddenly I was in like a 19th century school in Geneva, Switzerland. So there were a whole array of teachers and people, and then learning French was a whole experience. And then I came back to the United Nations School in New York, where there were even more characters. And unbeknownst to me, you know, they were all characters that I was absorbing. and then I go back to Paris for 2 years. I go to Paris for 2 years, more characters, and it's really like almost like an ode to all of these people who I've been able to use, as it were, for all the characters that I've played. You know, and my father is British, so I've played him. I was on a series for 3 years. It was actually after he had died, called USA High. And effectively, I was playing my dad for 3 years as the British headmaster.
Oh, wow.
Because that's what I grew up with. I was in New York, but my father would come home and he'd say, "Have you done your homework? What on earth is going on here? You must tidy up." You know, so that was just, you know, emblazoned in my DNA. And that's close to the character. For example, I played a solicitor on Mad Men. And so, once again, I was playing my dad. I mean, that's what this kind of all boils down to, is you're basically playing, you may not even know it, people that you've been around. And I rode the bus and the subway as a kid in New York, and it was just incredible cast of characters. And I've shared some of these characters with my kids. There was one woman who I was lucky enough to sit behind often going down Broadway in New York. And she just had, you didn't want to get off the bus because you wanted to hear, you know, the end of her story. But it would say, "So I was in Paramus the other day. I saw a dress on the rack, $24. What was I supposed to do? Bought the dress, had a little cottage cheese. All right, I had two scoops. I'm not going to lie." You know, and you didn't want to get off the bus. It was just a built-in entertainment on the public transit system in New York. And all of the accents. And when I'm back in New York, I almost purposely want to talk to people to see what's happening character-wise.
So your whole life has led to who you are today, all the different characters you've played, and you decided this is what I have to do.
It wasn't my decision. It was funny because this is how things happen in the creative world.
Okay.
We had a man who was actually from India originally who was painting at our house. He was painting the bathroom, and he worked at the theater at that time. And he heard me playing guitar, something in French, and he said, "Okay, tonight or someday soon, we're going to start recording these songs, and then you're going to write a show. You're going to present this, and I will help you. I have access to this theater in Hollywood, and you're going to do an evening of it." And if he had not said that, I wouldn't be talking to you about this. That's how these things work. It's incredible. So then I did that, and then, this is a number of years later, the man who's directing the current production, Lee Sankwich at the Zephyr Theater, who my wife has worked with many years ago, is a great guy. He had happened to be another accident of sorts at that one evening. And so he was having dinner with my daughter Liz and my wife Pamela, who you talked to. And he asked about what was happening with my show, and then I went to see him when he got back to L.A., and he said, yeah, that he would direct it. So the great thing is that we've had, you know, at least a six-week run to further explore all of it. And it's just been a great experience, you know.
Wow. So you write up some of this for sure with the one-man show? How much of it was your creative end and some of the other team on that?
No, it's totally, it's my writing. I wrote one of the songs, which was based on, sometimes a song will come from just a moment. I was in Paris and I saw Jean-Paul Sartre standing handing out leaflets and, you know, this iconic philosopher. And so I decided to write a song about him in which I was trying to talk to him, and he sort of dismisses me. It's just, you just have fun with it. I was listening to an interview yesterday or the other day with Carole King, and she said, when asked about her singing, she said, James Taylor at one point said, "Okay, you're singing tonight." She said, "No." And he said, "Actually, you are." And the rest is history. If he hadn't said that, she may have just continued, you know, writing the brilliant songs, but not necessarily singing them. So you have, there are these people that come along that encourage you to do
things. So the story is really about how different experiences, different things have shaped who you are, which I mentioned before.
Yeah, I mean, it's what's good about it is that it does become universal and that everyone is searching for an identity, particularly, I mean, it's that much more intense when you're a young person, you know, 17, 16, 17, that's basically when the show starts. And I was so impressionable. So anyone, if they were wearing a cool jacket, if they were espousing to be whatever they were, I'd want to become them, you know. And so, oh, I've got the right jacket on. We all know about that at school. If you weren't wearing a certain kind of right. jeans, you know, then you were not happening, you know. So there's an innocence. I was a total innocent, and what a perfect place to be an innocent in Geneva or Paris, and for yes. that matter, even in New York. We were living in Greenwich Village next to Bob Dylan. I mean, oh, it was unbelievable, you know, the environment, right. the music and the streets. And so it's all, you know, I'm able to share all of that, and I do songs, and, you know, and I sing French, too, because it's one of my first wow. loves. It's a lot of, it's just pure fun is what it is.
It sounds like it, and it really makes you relive those experiences. So were you a class clown growing up in school? Did you clown?
Yeah, I mean, I was somebody who was good at imitating the teachers, you know, and behind their back, you know, if they had a certain walk or a certain accent. And, of course, with the teachers, when it got to the teachers from different parts of the world, I mean, forget it. I had this one math teacher. He didn't end up in the show, but he happened to be from India, and I would say, I don't understand. He said, oh, hang it, man, there's nothing to explain to you. You don't understand this, you know. So I think this became gold for me for voiceover work. But what I was going to say is I don't want to leave out two people regarding this show. Not to mention, my wife has been like a muse. My daughter Elizabeth is a brilliant actress, who's also a writer and an actress. They've both inspired me so much during this whole run to come up with an experiment with new ideas for the show. That's what's great when you get to do theater and you have an actual run, so you can try different things. And then my guitar teacher and my daughter's guitar teacher, Tony Carafone, is brilliant, and he's in the show playing along with this brilliant cellist named Hillary Smith. And the two of them are just, you know, add so much flavor to say the least, environmental atmosphere. Environmental atmosphere, is that a term? I don't know.
Now, Nicola,
I'm not currently knowledgeable about such terminology. You know what I mean? My whole life is I've been trying to become other people.
No,
and the danger is when I'm in a store and somebody starts speaking to me, I take on their accent. It's frightening.
Have you learned the Pittsburgh accent, Nicholas? Do
you know what? I can't, but I worked with a great guy, and of course I'm blanking on his name now. I was in a film in Erie, Pennsylvania, about 2 years ago, I think now, and there was a guy who I hung out with who is from Pittsburgh. Great guy. He works all the time there, and the name escapes me, but he's a cool guy, and it's a really tricky accent, and I take accents really seriously. I'd really have to be there for a while.
I don't have a Pittsburgh accent. I'd never want to have a Pittsburgh accent, but I can impersonate some, and I'm funny with, like, Kermit the Frog or different things like that. So, I mean, I can do certain impersonations, and especially for my kids or different things, and being a former professional wrestler, Nicholas, I knew how to take on certain characters and different things. And I don't know if you know all my background. I was a teacher for so many years. Now I'm a tutoring and consulting company, so I work with kids all the time. And I hear these stories. And I think this is funny that, again, your youth. How far in your youth does the show go to? What age?
Well, it starts from when I'm about 16. But, for example, there was one teacher in Paris who influenced me because he was like I describe him doing the play as a – sorry for the static on this. He's a Sesame Street-like character, and he says, I will teach you a song to help you with your pronunciation. You are using your lips in Paris, you know. And he was literally like, it was like attending a Sesame Street show every day with him. He would pull things out of his briefcase. A flower, I found it this morning. You always have to go down a different street every day. It's an exploration life. And he just had huge impact on me. Just my essential optimism he really helped with, you know, and that's like, so basically I go up to around the age of 20, actually. That's right.
20 years old. And in that time period.
And that's when I was able.
Right.
I beg your pardon?
I said, in that time period, Nicholas, you figured out a lot of your different things that make you the successful actor that you are today.
Well, what happened is, you know, miracles happen, and that's the only way it happens. I think I really do think there's luck, is that Maureen Stapleton asked me to be in a show with her, and we went on tour, and Tony Perkins, you know, who played Norman Bates, delightful character. He directed it. So for 10 weeks, I was going up and down the East Coast. Actually, we were in Philadelphia at Playhouse in the Park. Have you ever been there? It's kind of cool.
No, I have not. No.
The the dressing rooms were had been stables. There was horseback riding in the park, apparently. But along the way, along the East Coast, people who Maureen and Tony Perkins knew would come backstage. So one of my heroes was Cyril Richard, who played the original Captain Hook,
okay,
you know, in Peter Pan. And I became like an 8-year-old. I went, oh, my God, it's Captain Hook, you know. So I think that, you know what it is, what I think is important is to remain like an 8-year-old in terms of staying open. In fact, actually about 2 years ago, I was with my family, and we found ourselves getting in line to just say hello to Paul McCartney.
Oh.
And I remember having seen in London as a kid, A Hard Day's Night, and I became that kid again. And
wow.
I tapped him on the shoulder and said, excuse me, Mr. McCartney, and he turned around and was so warm. And he has that too, you know. It's like he's still performing because he has that love,
right,
you know, and wanting to share. That's where I think all of this is at, if essential enthusiasm, you know.
Yes, definitely.
And, yeah, and always wanting to learn as opposed to, I've got this. No,
right.
I don't. You should start your day saying, I don't know anything.
Right.
You know, and then it'll be fun.
Yeah, and also being willing to take the chances, experience life, and not control it, because you know life is just brings that type of thing out. Now, Nicholas, I was thinking about when you're talking about specifically the story. I think this could be a book someday, because again, the stories just of your childhood, you could talk about your whole life at one point. But again, you got to keep, once you finally, I think it makes you excited to be writing, because I think of Nicholas, what you did is you started on stage, then went to film and television. So you basically saw, I believe actors that first start on stage are much easier to work with later on, because
Absolutely.
Guess what? You have that audience, and you have that audience that you have to engage. When you're doing TV, take 52 takes.
Okay, yeah,
if you're doing the way I learned how to do radio was going live, where guess what? You can't make any mistakes in the world. So when I do a pre-record, I'm not like, okay, let's stop this right now, Nicholas. I'm just messed up. No, I'm used to going live, so I treat everything like it's live. But I had to go through that. And then in the ring, I had to impromptu all the time when the guy messed up a spot or the crowd screaming. I say, hey, this is perfect time to do this.
That's
helped.
True. You know,
yeah, go ahead.
I totally agree. The other night, and I've been doing, I don't know how many performances, there's a song that I open with, and I simply, the words went out of my brain, but because I was an improv person for many years, and I still, you know, do a lot of improv, I just made up the words to the first part of the song, you know, it's like, that's just what you have to do sometimes, and what's frightening is that people, you know, people don't know the song, didn't know, in a way, that's kind of, oh my God, you know, how did that happen? But my family knew that was there. They went, now what? You know. But that's the beauty of it. You know, as you're saying, you know, it's like you're walking a gangplank. You know, you don't know what's going to happen.
Right. And then the way you learn from the theater is that on stage is that, guess what? You're going to make mistakes and you just kind of go with the flow. But if you're a perfectionist, and specifically when you're acting, a lot of times you're not going to discover a new character for yourself, a new way of portraying that character. You're more willing to improvise, seeing, okay, I'm watching this person I'm acting with, like on TV, and you know what, I got to make this change, or when I'm in film and say, I think this is going to respond more. You're more willing to make those changes and tweak things, and that's important. And so what would you
say,
do you like to perform better on stage or on film?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Stage.
There's no contest, because as everything you're saying, I mean, it's just to be able to explore over a period of time and to be creative. You know, what I love about the theater is the collaboration that takes place. You know, there used to be more collaboration on film.
Yeah.
But now, you know, a studio is directing the movie. I mean, I'm still in touch with John Landis, who I worked with on Trading Places. And, you know, he used to have, you know, he'd said directors at that time had more power. You know, they could really, you know, they were the king on the set. But now you have studio people come and say, you know, I don't want that character to be saying that. You know, it's crazy. So in the theater, there's still that wonderful collaboration that takes place, you know.
Absolutely. Well, Nicholas, where's the best place we can find information on you and so they can learn about the performances, especially where you are? Are you looking to bring this on tour more places than just in?
I'd like to go to other places, absolutely. Another city, preferably Pittsburgh, since I'm
See, I like that idea, and you should contact your good friends at Carnegie Mellon, and there you go. Now have it for sure. But so you're looking to bring this performance other places as well. That's fantastic.
So it's the Zephyr Theater in Los Angeles on Melrose, and you can go to Theater Mania to find out about it. Just go to Theater Mania Marketing and Ticketing. I don't know. Do you need a number?
No, you can give a phone number. It's fine, for sure.
1-866-811-4111. And you can, at the moment, they're giving their 50% off tickets. It's kind of cool. And we've added a Saturday night starting next week, which is nice. So.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's just been a great experience.
And do you have a...
Great hearing about your stuff.
Oh, yeah, thanks. Do you know your social media, any places we can follow you? Are you on Twitter, do you have Facebook, all that different
Not
stuff?
Not me. I'm old school, I'm afraid. You can find out about me in the Britannica Encyclopedia. You should find me remember those old encyclopedias at school?
Yes, yes.
I'll be in one of those somewhere, you know.
Or Wikipedia, or you could follow your wife, who's more with
the
social.
You can follow my wife. Yeah.
Family guest. I tweeted her. I'll have to tweet out when the interviews go on the syndication through her. But good talking, Nicholas. I had a blast. And so the last point, would you say your biggest part that will live in infamy is a National Anthem's Christmas Vacation? Would you believe that?
Yes, probably because of the line, "I don't know Margot," you know.
Yes.
That seems to get to people.
Can you give me the voice for sure? Give me the voice for sure. I don't know Margot.
I don't know Margot.
I love it. I had a blast talking to you, and best of luck
to you. Thank
you
so much.
All right, take care, Nicholas.
Take care.
See ya. Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
You're listening to the Total Celebrity Show, and we'll be back in just a moment. We're back to the Total Celebrity Show on the Total Education Network. Again, TotalTutor.net for more information. Twitter, TotalTutor. Neil S. Haley. Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley. Instagram, TotalTutor. Pinterest, Neil Haley. And Google Plus, Neil Haley. And when you think about the Dallas Cowboys, you think about someone who was a great target for both Danny White, Roger Staubach. You think of somebody who literally, when I hear his name, I remember it, especially as a Pittsburgh Steelers fan. So I'm excited to welcome the program 3-time Pro Bowler, former Dallas Cowboy, Doug Cosby. Doug, how are you?
I'm doing well. Doing well. How are you doing in cold Pennsylvania?
Yeah, we're doing okay. We're surviving. I was getting nervous in my makeshift studio when I said, oh my gosh, the kids are home, but helped the wife with lunch and everything, and we survived. And that's the cool thing about recording as an entrepreneur. I'm sure, like yourself as an entrepreneur, we're always moving, and we have moving parts, so we have to figure out when we have time for things, for sure, because the best way is record then go for live, because we're constantly moving. So I'm excited to talk to you today for sure. Now, what would you say, Doug, was one of your fondest memories of the Dallas Cowboys? I'm jumping right on off the bat with that, but what was one of your greatest memories with the Cowboys?
Oh, boy. There was a lot of them. Probably the one that really sticks out of my mind was the first time being in the at the training facility, which wasn't much of a facility compared to what they have now, but shortly after being drafted and just walking around the locker room and seeing other names on the lockers. As I got drafted in 1979, and the Cowboys had been in the Super Bowl the two previous seasons, my junior and senior year in college, and, was kind of the height of America's team. And, you recognize like 95% of the names on the lockers and go on, oh, yeah, I know who Harvey Martin is. I know who Roger Staubach. Oh, there's Tony Dorsett's locker. I mean, going through all these, seeing all these guys, it was a bit overwhelming, being in that locker room for the first time is, something that I'll always remember.
Well, I can imagine you're drafted and then you walk in and you say, I watched all these guys on TV, because you know that the teams that were America's team, the Cowboys and the Pittsburgh Steelers, they're on television a lot in a lot of places all over the country. So you saw the Super Bowls and you saw specifically enough who these players were, and you're like, I'm on the same team with them. And I think that that set the bar high for yourself, right, Doug? You said, hey, I'm playing with Tony Dorsett, I'm playing with Roger Staubach, I'm playing with later Danny White, and then you're looking at, you know, all the other unbelievable who's who names on that Cowboy team.
Yeah, there was a lot of great players, you know, and then, you know, with Coach Landry being there and Dan Reeves and Mike Ditka and Gene Stallings, you know, all being assistants on that staff. They were all there, I think, my first 3 years, and then, you know, they started, you know, leaving and getting head jobs of their own. You know, so it was quite an organization at that time.
Yeah, definitely, and it looks like it's coming back now. But would you say you bleed Dallas Cowboys, Doug? That's your team, would you say?
You know, not really. I'm not a huge fan of the NFL, and very rarely watch it. You know, I mean, it's you know. I don't get upset if they win, but, you know, I really can't say, you know, I'm a fan of any team. Like I said, I really, very rarely do I watch it. You know, and to sit down and watch a whole game is just not part of my routine.
Is that because of coaching afterwards? Do you think it changed the if you would have just been a player, played for the Cowboys and went on to another career, possibly that would have been different?
You know, I don't know. I mean, I just you know, there's just a lot of things going on in professional sports that, you know, I just don't necessarily agree with. And, you know, if you continue to support it, I think you're kind of endorsing the culture, in the environment and the industry. And, you know, it's just not, I'm just not a big fan of it.
Gotcha. And what do you think has changed from when you played to now, in your opinion?
I mean, a lot of things have changed, and, you know, and a lot of it for the good. You know, there's a lot more money involved, which is good and bad. You know, it just depends what you're doing with the money. But, you know, I've been involved with coaching a little bit at the professional level early in my career, and at the major college level and at the high school level. And the biggest difference I see is this generation, and it's not just in the NFL or in sports, but I think this is a real leadership void in our country and culture, you know, from national politics down to, you know, Little League Baseball. It's just really hard, you know, to find people with really good leadership skills that are willing to lead.
Interesting. And you feel that being a coach for so many years, you learned how to lead and you wish that others would follow suit in certain ways, especially even when you say motivating kids in high school and seeing the parents and how uninvolved at times they are and so much caught up in different things. And they're caring just about, you know, are they playing on the field instead of their character? Right. For sure.
Yes. Yep. Yeah. And yeah, I mean, there's a lot, you know, I mean, you know, I think this is human beings, you know, we all kind of get in that survival mode that, you know, I mean, it's just ingrained in all of us. And, you know, it just seems like it's so much more prevalent now that, you know, it's like, what's in it for me? You know, the way I always talk to our kids is, you know, there's way too many takers and, you know, not enough givers. And, you know, and that's the great thing about football. You know, you can learn a lot of life lessons about working together and accomplishing goals together. And I just feel like the game at all levels is moving, you know, further and further away from that into, you know, what's in it for me. Because I mean, you see kids, high school kids, leaving their team workouts to go get individual coaching or go to a college camp so they can show off their skills, instead of working during the summer with their teammates, you know, to try to get better, to be as good as you can be as a team. And, you know, it's just, I don't know, in the 50s, 60s, 70s, you know, in the culture of youth sports, if it was like that.
And does that make you want to be a part of it, even in that level when you hear these things, Doug? Or
you know, part of it is, you know, you want to try to stay involved to try to help change it, or at least, you know, have an influence on it. Because, you know, it's easy to just sit back and point out what's wrong with things, but, you know, it's try to get in and help change it. And, you know, there are a lot of people that are doing great things in youth sports, mm-hmm. high school sports, collegiate sports, but there's just not enough of them.
Such a big business now, Doug. Really is.
Yeah. And, you know, and that's, you know, the old saying, money is the root of all evil. I mean, it definitely corrupts people. And you know, you really get into, you know, at the professional level, you always did. But I think, you know, if you're making, you know, $120,000 a year 25 years ago compared to making $6 million a year, you're a little worried about yourself.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And, you know, you want to take care of your family. A lot of times, you know, extended family, you know, you're taking care of a couple generations, and it's understandable. You know, and that's, to me, that's kind of the sad part about where sports have gone, just because of all the money. And, you know, it's not to say that it's wrong, you know, for people to think and behave that way, but, you know, it's not, I mean, because if you ask, I say this all the time, if you saw, I don't even know, Jason Witten walking down the street, what question would you go up and ask him if you wanted to know if he was a football player? You would probably go up and go, hey, do you play football?
Right.
Right? And Google the word play. What is play? It's about enjoyment.
Right.
Right? Having fun. And, you know, it's a lot of that's taken away when, you know, there's so much money involved. And all these kids and these parents are, you know, they all think they're going to get a college scholarship. They all think they're going to go play in the NFL.
Exactly.
It's great to have that dream. Great to have that dream, but, you know, the bottom line is just be the best you can be.
Definitely.
And if that's what, you know, God has willed for you, you're going to do all the work. No one's going to give it to you. And you might make it, you might not, but, and you know, enjoy the ride. And too many people just don't anymore.
They don't have fun. And the point is that parents put all their eggs in the sports baskets instead of academics and education when that's there for you. Education, if you work hard enough, you can be very successful in life. And education is such an important thing. And yet you see parents will drag their kids to 25 workouts and all these different things and, you know, practices for 3 to 4 hours a night all year round. But then when it comes to books, they don't see it as an important thing. And that's
yeah, the, I mean, there's a little too much of that, and then the early specialization is ridiculous. I mean, I think there's been a lot of studies done. I think the five top quarterbacks at NFL now were multi-sport athletes in high school. Everyone I played with, they were multi-sport athletes in high school. Some of them even in college. And you know, the specialized early is just, I mean, I think, you know, it's a little less than 2%, you know, high school athletes are going to get a college scholarship. So, I mean, you need to enjoy the process and you need to play for the right reasons. And if you get a college scholarship, you're fortunate enough to play professionally, you know, that's great. But, you know, that shouldn't be the end game. You know, that was never my goal. I just tried to be the best I could be, you know, every day that I was doing it, try to get better.
What helped, I guess, Doug, is the money wasn't so big. It was for the love of the game, and that's kind of disappearing. And your hope is by coaching in high school, you are able to keep the love of the game going with your players, right?
Yeah, you know, that's what you hope you can do is that, you know, enjoy the process, enjoy, you know, your teammates, enjoy the competition, and, you know, learn, you know, there's so many valuable life lessons playing any team sport. But I think, you know, football is probably the, at least in our country, you know, probably the physically most demanding, mental toughness,
yes,
you know, kind of, you know, activity that kids can do. And, you know, you find out a lot about yourself, you know, playing football at a young age, and, you know, just trying to encourage people to do it for the right reasons.
Absolutely. So now, Doug, you're currently coaching high school football where right now?
Over in Hawaii at Kamehameha High School. It's a school, private school. You have to be Hawaiian to attend the school. And been there for about 2 years.
What is that different from coaching in other high schools or other leagues? What is the difference of coaching in that private school, would you say?
football's football, and, 16, 17, 18-year-old kids are pretty much the same everywhere. The fact that all the students here have to be Hawaiian, there is obviously the Hawaiian culture, which is actually a lot about what we were just kind of talking about. There's a word in Hawaiian called, it's pronounced kokua, which basically means to do something just to help somebody, not necessarily for it to benefit you. And, that's a big part of the culture. So in a lot of ways, it's a little bit easier here at this school to get kids to play together and to play for each other in a lot of ways. But in a lot of ways, it's still tough because, it's the same as a kid in California, exactly. Or Pittsburgh. They still have all the social media and, the World Wide Web.
Exactly.
And TV and, the same movies, the same music. There's so many negative influence on kids nowadays. And, part of it's a little bit easier, but it's pretty much the same challenge.
I understand. Doug, is there a place we can find information on you for our listeners? Does it check Wikipedia, or do you have a website or anything?
I do not have a website. No, that's not anything I've really been interested in. I'm not a big self-promoter.
Okay, but it's good for us. Where are you now? What you're doing? And I love the fact of, again, the talking about trying to give back by coaching these kids and to help them and really have them see specifically about life and football and teamwork and things like that. That some of the stuff that's going on and telling our listeners out there to watch out about how we get caught up, especially as parents, with our kids' athletics. And focus on growing them to be great adults, not raising them to be adults, not kids, and looking at specifically athletics as the end-all, be-all. So I appreciate you calling, Doug, and best of luck to you.
Yeah, appreciate it.
All right,
good talking to you.
All right, good talking to you too, Doug. Okay. Take care. Bye-bye. You're listening to Total Celebrity Show, and we'll be back in just a moment.